RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m, and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast.
Welcome to the Happy Hour, your mix of music and conversations around sight loss and well-being.
There's lots coming up on the show today, but first, let's have this. It's Baby Love and Diana Ross. You're listening to The Happy Hour with Holly and Paulina. Hope you are having a lovely day, and thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
As always, we're here with some amazing music and, of course, our latest conversations around sight loss, well-being and staying happy.
Today, we'll be chatting taking on an active challenge to help boost our physical well-being.
You'll also be hearing from one lady that decided to put pen to paper and write down her whole life story quite late in her life.
And shortly, we're going to hear one man's experience of sight loss. That's coming up after Kylie Minogue. Now it's time to find out what life is really like living with sight loss, as our red cell spoke with one man still coming to terms with his diagnosis.
Julian Neal, like me, has retinitis pigmentosa. Welcome to the show, and could you tell us a little bit about life with RP?
Well, thank you very much for having me here. My life with RP, well, it's certainly been a dramatic change, and it's been a very, very slow sort of car crash in some respects. I was first diagnosed with RP when I was probably about 18, I think, and that was found when I was actually learning to drive, although the sight loss that I got at that point wasn't actually sufficient enough to prevent me from driving. And obviously I had quite a career in the automotive trade and also in further education, teaching motor mechanics for a good many years. And then back end of 2015, I then sat and had a DVLA eye test. Then at that point, the DVLA said I was suffering too much sight loss in order to be able to continue driving. So I had my license revoked. And then it's been this sort of almost graceful pirouetting car crash ever since, really. And now I suppose I'm at the point now where I am just a passenger with it. Obviously, my career has pretty much ended. I had quite a bit of difficulty getting support, and there was quite a large gap between actually losing my driving license and my life changing and the point where I was actually registered as visually impaired.
You're sounding quite phlegmatic about it, but I can imagine it must have really hit your self-esteem and your confidence.
Yeah, it's a real kick in the teeth. Yeah, because obviously I'm aware that I have this knowledge and I have this skill, but now it's essentially I've had a door to my career and past and my earning capacity. You know, that particular door has been slammed shut in my face now. Nobody wants a visually impaired mechanic. And again, you know, mechanics are required to have a driving license, because even if they don't drive on the road, they still have to move vehicles around within the workshop. And obviously one of the tests of competency for that is having a driving license. And if you haven't got one, then obviously no vehicle maintenance workshop will actually even talk to you.
And on top of those practicalities, have you found negative stereotypes being aimed at you since your diagnosis became more obvious to those around you?
I would say that the main difficulty that I've experienced is getting people to actually understand what I can and can't see. And in some respects, that's also a variable for me, because obviously there are times where, you know, I walk into something or I'll headbutt something and I think to myself, I wish somebody had told me about that. But then likewise, the flip side to that is when somebody tells me something, oh, just mind that, that's low hanging. And then in your mind, you're thinking, yeah, I know. And obviously you get an awful lot of people trying to tell you that there's something there, and it's about trying not to get frustrated with that, because at the end of the day they are trying to do something helpful. And I suppose it's trying to find an analogy for people so that you can actually get that across to them to understand it.
Obviously you have been in touch with RNIB. What help have you managed to access, and how useful have you found it?
Well, the biggest help that I got was assistance with getting PIP living allowance. And again, having spoken to other people with visual impairments, they kind of agree with me, you know, that it is an uphill battle, because people don't understand that you can have some sight but still be classed as blind or severely sight impaired. Getting that across, and even to the DWP, trying to explain to them that, well, actually, I do need help. I might not need the kind of help where, yeah, you know, I need a catheter or particular aids to get me in and out of the bath, but I do need assistance, you know, and that assistance, in a lot of respects for me, is just having the lights on. Mm. You know, you would think about the current state of electricity bills. There are rooms in the house which I don't go into because they're too dark for me. Yet to invest in brightening them up to a point where I can actually see, that's actually quite a cost implication for me. And at the moment, obviously, I don't work.
Mm.
And it's a bizarre experience, because with regards to employment, that's another sort of area where the RNIB, if I had a job, would be uber helpful with all the legislation and support that's in place for once you have employment. But it's not been particularly useful with helping me to find an employment which can obviously feed into the skill sets that I've got, but also not be overly challenging, because again, you know, when you've got this hanging over you, and obviously I'm at the stage now where I don't know whether it's going to continue to deteriorate, where I'm going to be completely blind with no sight at all, or whether it's going to plateau again like it did many, many years ago. It's a very, very underlying stress, if that makes sense, you know, where anything on top of that can actually become overwhelming.
I certainly have had very low moments in my 35-year journey with retinitis pigmentosa, and certainly I've found some of the counselling and the peer support that RNIB has been able to provide very useful. Have you managed to access those services as well?
Yes, certainly. I tried the talk and support groups, but coming from an industry where, you know, there's a lot of loud noises, then obviously I've got a moderate hearing loss as well. And obviously I believe that RP does have its own implications towards hearing as well. So I found the format actually quite difficult to sort of live with. And bizarrely enough as well, I'm determined to try and keep myself moving, because again, it's one of those situations where, you know, I'm 54 now, potentially I could be around for another 30-40 years. So the last thing I want to do is sit around and feel sorry for myself. So I'm determined to try and go out there. So I pick my grandchildren up from school. So trying to find a format which fits into what I'm also trying to maintain, you know, with regards normality within my life as it is now. I'm speaking with Matthew Trickett, I think it is, in the East Midlands RNIB Connect, to try and maybe stir up some sort of interest. Because again, the thing I think I miss the most about work is the actual banter. And that's what I'd like to sort of try and work with the RNIB and various other support groups that might be able to feed into that and actually get something going with regards to that. Now, whether that would be woodworking or vehicle restoration, which again, I can still do it. It takes me longer. But again, if there's other people that would be interested in that, whether that be, you know, visually impaired or not, then I do have the skills in order to provide that. And certainly the RNIB has been very, very supportive in that. And again, I think the issue as well lies with the fact that myself, I can tell people what I don't want to do, But likewise as well, I struggle to understand what I can do and what I want to do, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It's focusing on what you can achieve rather than what your sight has taken away from you. But equally, with a degenerative condition such as retinitis pigmentosa, you're constantly having to reevaluate what you can and can't do.
Yeah, it's basically trying to find your way through a swamp.
Absolutely. With a white cane.
Yes.
For anybody new to a sight loss journey, what would your key piece of advice be?
That's a tricky one. My experience became a lot more positive in some respects with regard to support once I had the certificate of visual impairment. Once I'd got the diagnosis, once I got a piece of paper that actually said that I was severely sight impaired / blind, as it is on the piece of paper and on the card I've got now, that's when things really, really changed. And that was obviously was when I felt as though I got more support from the authorities, so people like Disability Direct from my local council, who then obviously fed me towards RNIB. I think what I would suggest to anybody else who's experiencing sight loss for the first time is start off with the RNIB, because they're the ones who've got a lot of the knowledge you require in order to be able to guide you and at least put you in the right direction.
Julian Neil, thank you so much for sharing your sight loss journey with the listeners, and I hope you'll come back onto the station in years to come to continue your story with us.
Definitely, I'd look forward to that.
If you'd like to get in touch with the RNIB, our helpline number is 0303 123 9999.
Thank you so much, Red Cell there. And Julian will be back at the end of the show to share a song that means a lot to him for our music therapy moment. Coming up after Roachport, we're going to hear about a new running group in South Wales.
I've been drowning in a world of madness, just trying to keep my head above. Darkness, nearly giving up on everything. Thought I'd never feel my heart.
High on Love by Roachford on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, we love chatting about different ways that we can look after our physical health on the happy hour. Well, one such way could involve running.
Just Run Pennebont is a community social running group based in Bridgend, South Wales. The group was started to help people to be more active, but also to give people who are experiencing challenges in their health and personal lives the chance to get out and meet people in a similar situation. And they've recently started a group for people with sight loss. Joining me now to discuss it are the group's founders, Emma Marshall and Stephanie Puddy. Thanks for joining us both.
Hi, nice to be here. Great to meet you.
So you've both been active in local running groups for some time now. What was the reason for starting a VI group?
Well, in our social running group in Bridgend, we had a visually impaired runner, and it made us realise sort of running from a different aspect, all the different things that we needed to take into account. So we did the guide runner course and realised there was nothing in our area for people with visual impairment, and especially if they wanted to start running. So we decided to start the walk to run group.
And it's a walk to run group, isn't it? So it's a good level for beginners to start with?
Oh, yeah, completely.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how's it been going so far?
Yeah, it's been really positively received, which we've been thrilled with. So we did a taster session back in March just to introduce people to what it would be, get them familiar with us and the location that we were going to do the sessions on, so that they could feel comfortable that it was completely safe and that we'd done the training. And we've completed 2 weeks so far of the course, and the feedback we're getting from those who are attending already is really, really positive.
Have you had visually impaired people who've never tried running join in?
Yes, I think there's been, I don't think any of them have.
No, we've got one lady, Maggie, who has run in the past. Lady Anita has taken part in a few races when she could see a bit better previously. And then everybody else is complete beginners.
And you're both guide runners in the group. How do you find that experience?
It was really interesting to learn. We both went on the course together. We were paired together. One of us would be blindfolded and the other one would lead. It was really interesting. It was quite an experience, actually.
Putting it into practice was really important to us, because what we didn't want to do was do the course and then never use those skills or have the opportunity to help others with them. So that was why we, as soon as we could, wanted to start this group, so that we could have the opportunity to keep practicing those skills and build our confidence, so that if there are runs coming up, whether it be parkrun or anything else, if somebody asks for help and we're available, that we feel confident that we can do so.
And what sort of people are members of the group at the moment? Have they got different sort of backgrounds and ability and ages?
Yeah, completely different. They're from different areas of Bridgend. There's one person who travels from Cardiff, but some of them, I think, knew each other before they came, but some didn't. But completely different range of age and background and circumstances. And so, yeah, really, really different. And it's really great to chat to all of them.
And are there any sort of common ambitions for people when they join the group? Are they looking to maybe run a 5K? Are they looking to go a bit further?
They haven't said it, and we're trying not to even focus on that. We really want this just to be about there being something that they can do, where they can meet those others, where they can get active, where they can do something that maybe they weren't having the opportunity to do before. And through talking to them, as it's impacted us all, but it really hits home how much it's impacted them even more the last 2 years, and how isolated they've been, and how maybe things that they were active doing before just completely stopped, and they kind of have become just housebound or a bit of a recluse, because those support networks that they previously had were no longer there. So for me anyway, and I think for them, it's just about getting them out of the house. We don't care whether they ever do a 5K or whether they ever run. It's just getting them out and being active.
And the sessions are held on a running track, so they're completely safe. There's no any sort of dangers. There's no like pavements, there's no animals or other people to get in the way, so they're completely relaxed. They know that they're safe, and I think it's like helped them try running ways they wouldn't probably normally. Week one, we didn't think any of them would try to run, but week two, they now all have had a go, and that's really made a difference.
And if people are interested in joining the group, where and when can they find you?
So we're every Saturday,
1 o'clock on the running track in Bridgend. And they can find us, well, Instagram, Facebook,
Twitter. We're trying to reach out and tell your friends and, yeah, share it wherever you can.
And you need to sign up beforehand? Is that the best way to do it?
No, just let us know you're coming. So we've got enough guides. We've got quite a lot of guide to help us. So as long as we've got enough people in place, we can have anybody as short notice as the Friday before.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you the very best with it. And Just Run Pennebont founders Emma Marshall and Stephanie Puddy, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Howell Davies there. You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. And we still have more to come on the show. Paulina, next up is one of yours, right?
Yes, I'll be speaking with Mrs. Jill Fry about her autobiography, Born Too Soon, which actually, you know, you'll find this interesting. She decided to write it late in her life. I think she was 83 or 84 years old when she started writing.
That is incredible. She must have so many experiences to share.
Yeah, is that something you're going to do? Are you going to write your autobiography when you're older as well? Or can we look forward to it earlier?
Can you imagine me continuing my blog when I'm, say, like 85 years old?
Absolutely. I would love to see if you finally decided to join a sports club at that age.
Yeah, can't wait for that content. So look for that in however many years' time. Maths isn't my strongest point, but, you know. Don't want to give away my age, but you never know. I think it's really interesting how she decided to take on that hobby, because we hear a lot about young people doing writing. So I think it's great how she's, I guess, flipping those misconceptions on the head and saying, I'm going to share my life story.
Yeah, and she actually has a really fun way of writing. She's very matter of fact when she describes certain events, and it just adds a bit of humor to it, even if maybe not necessarily always attended, but definitely quite a nice read.
Okay, that's coming up after Paloma Faith and a cover of this classic song. Nobody can tell ya. There's only one song worth singing. They may try and sell ya, but it hangs them up to see someone like you. Ooh,
today to tell us a little bit more about her recent writing venture, and her book is Mrs. Jill Fry. It is so nice to have you here, Jill.
Thank you.
Now, Jill, would you mind if we started at the beginning? So we'll start with your sight condition. Can you tell us a little bit more? What is it?
Well, because I'm an albino, the sight tends to be weak anyway. I've called it born too soon, because the things they did then, they wouldn't dream of doing today. And I had the pupils tattooed. The person who did it at the time said that it would help me with the sight and also be cosmetically, you know, better, because I had my eyes were very red. My parents were guided by the science of the day. It turned out to be making my sight worse. And I know it's worse because I've seen people with sight loss, albinism, and I've seen them at work, and they can give them glasses. But unfortunately, they can't actually give me glasses to improve my vision. So that's the situation I was in when I was a baby. Took over 4 operations to do half the cornea pupil at the time. And I was only 6 months old. My mum was in hospital with me because I was being breastfed still at the time. And I wrote it really because also the education that I had was pretty different to what it is today.
It was quite different. And you had a bit of a rebellious streak as well.
I did run away, and I did get taken away from school because I was so unhappy. However, I got home teacher, literally a man who's also had the sight loss, but he was a lot older than me. I was only a little girl at the time. He came once a week to my house, and I learned one passage of Braille for the next week, so that I had to read it back to him next week. And that's really all I did. But at boarding school, we did maths was done on a steel board with pegs, like a pegboard, really. And we had little steel pegs, and we used to have to put the shape of the numbers. And numbers were always in Braille as well. As regards when I left school, there was nothing there. I wasn't trained for anything. As I say in my book, the boys were trained to do piano tuning and boot repairs at that time. And the girls just went on knitting machines. They used to have great big knitting machines, and they had workshops. So you still had to live away to work, because obviously the workshops were not everywhere, and that wasn't for me either. But I always wanted to sing. I always wanted to sing. I always envied the girls that sang, and I used to go to tap and ballet dancing. It was my voice that got me a job for the rest of the working time as a telephonist. And I went to London to train, and my dad came and picked me up every weekend. I stayed there during the week. And, you know, I trained to be a telephonist. But believe you me, by the time I retired, I really had enough. I'd sitting, and I have a brain, and I always wanted to do more. But there weren't the facilities. I mean, now you have readers at university to help people with anything they want read. It's a different world. And that is why I called my book Born Too Soon.
And is that, like, listening to your story and how different your upbringing was, is that the reason you decided to write down your life to show how different it is?
I really wrote it for the grandchildren, you know, because I remember my grandma lived to be 102, and she died back in the 60s. So if I'd have been interested, but you're not when you're young, you don't want to, you know, you're not interested in what's going on with the older people in that sense. And if I'd have listened to my grandma talking or listened to what she could have gone back another 2 generations, and it probably would have been quite fascinating to hear about the family history. So this is partly why I've written it. And all my friends say, well, I'd love to read it, and they think it's really fascinating and interesting. And one friend, he said to me, you've written just how you speak. It's really good. You know, I'm quite pleased with myself, really, to have done it. And again, thanks for the computer age, you know, because obviously that's made a difference to everything. Spelling, my spelling was awful. I mean, I never learnt, really didn't learn anything to speak of. Only what my mum and dad taught me. They taught me to do letters, i.e. capital letters, but I never did writing, you know, proper joined up writing or anything like that.
How was it learning I guess, how to write, because you wrote a whole book that's over 100 pages later in your life. Did you find that difficult, or was that something that technology really helped you finally learn?
Yeah, no, technology was the thing. I did it on the computer. There's still a couple of spelling mistakes, even though my daughter proofread it. It's still a couple of, quite funny, really, because my spelling, when you can't see, well, a lot of people with visually handicapped, they'll tell you it's difficult. Spelling is difficult. But with the computer, you can do the spell checker, you know, and that helps a lot. When my husband passed away, I started doing a journal because I fractured my femur and I had to have my leg up for ages. And I started writing a journal. And from that, I thought, you know what, it's, you know, I will put down what happened to me in the early days. And that's how it started, really.
And I feel like you have this really lovely, like your friend said, you have this lovely sense about writing. It almost feels like a slightly dry sense of humor. It's very matter of fact when you describe certain situations. And it's lovely. Is that, have you ever considered yourself a writer or an author when you were younger, or like even a few years before you started writing?
Well, not really, but I do write one or two little, what I call parodies, where appropriate. So I wrote something for my auntie because she was in a care home a few years ago. And it was Christmas. She said, I want to do something for entertainment. So I wrote a parody of Cinderella.
Did she like it?
Oh, she did. She did do it, yeah, at Christmas. Everybody said it was funny. Yeah, I've done one or two things for friends like that. Silly little things like the little friend boy was eight this year, and his name's Henry. So I'm Henry, I'm eight, I am Henry, I'm eight, I am, you know, blah, blah, that song. So it's things like that I do, but I'm not proper what I call poetry. I just got a sense of humour. And I must admit, I do seem to make people laugh, which is better than making them cry, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm curious, do you listen to audiobooks, or do you have authors or writers that have inspired you in how, I guess, you write or tell your stories, or that you just enjoy even?
So I like stories about human families and things, you know, that sort of thing. It's only really recently that I've got the audiobooks, to be honest. When I say recently, I've got one of those little boom boxes by the bed, and I get stories from RNIB. I'm not very good on authors because I haven't read enough to be aware. I say to my daughter sometimes, you know, suggest an author, and she's got some on the Alexa for me, but I haven't had time to listen to them much at the moment. I've been too busy, but I can get some books on that. Or I know the type of book I like. But not particularly an author, I'm afraid.
I'm curious, because your story is, it's quite a long story, obviously. You're writing about your whole life. We're talking, what, 84 years? Mm-hmm. If you were trying to sell your book to someone, what story, one story from the whole book, would you bring up or would you mention and tell them to try and entice them to read it?
If there were a person who had sight loss, I would certainly say how medically things have changed so much. If it was just a general public, I would say my childhood and education, lack of them, that's where it's mostly changed. To be honest with you, Paulina, having written it, and I'm, as you say, I'm 84 now, I suddenly looked back on it and I thought, you know what, I really didn't take control of my life until the menopause. I really think I let things go along until I got to in the 50s when I took control and I went off on my own, which, I mean, I don't think my husband thought I could do, and I'm surprised myself, but, you know, I'm quite a positive person, I suppose, and I'd got to the point where I thought, you know, as far as I know, we only have one life. So I just left and got on with it. I didn't know what I was going to do, where I was going to go, but it all worked out in the end. And
because a bit of a spoiler, you met a wonderful gent later in your life, and
yes.
you lived many adventures with him.
We did, and I felt completely safe with him. All over the world we went traveling. They say everybody has a certain amount of good luck in their life, don't they? I think everybody has their share of bad luck and good luck, and mine came nearer the end of it. But having said that, I mean, I was a happy child. It wasn't until the menopause when you start, you know, you're thinking and you get a bit tearful, don't you? I used to have a friend, Beryl, next door, and I used to hear her trotting off in her high heels to the train and thinking, I'll never have that kind of freedom, you know? But as I said, I don't think I really took control until I was in my 50s, to be honest. If people said I couldn't do something, I accepted it. I mean, my first husband, I mean, he was a good dad, don't get me wrong, but he was set up first, the first meal, oh, you can't cook, I better do the cook them, which was nice. Some people would say, well, good on you, you know, lucky you. But it wasn't like that. It was like, he said I couldn't do something and I accepted it. But of course I did really, in fact I loved cooking. I always did lots of cooking and baking, and I went to a course of used to be the technical college in those days. I did a typing course at Tech. You know, I was always prepared to have a go.
Did that surprise you, realising, I guess, later in your life, how much you can actually achieve and how much you can do?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, but as I say, you only get one life, and that's all, you know, although I say born too soon, I'm not complaining as such. And there is no point in getting upset and sad and all the other things, because, you know, all you do is spend the rest of your life being miserable. And I don't do that. I go out a lot. And I go to various organisations. I mean, my daughter works at a doctor's, and she said, we get women in their 60s, or people in their 60s, act older than you, you know. I think you've got to be positive about things, and I've tried to be, so, you know.
Yeah, because you might not realise it, but if your grandma is anything to go by, you might have another 20 or maybe even more years in front of you.
That's right. We never know these days. It could be, wouldn't it? I mean, what I mean really, Paulina, is that some people get to a certain age and they sort of give up. They don't make the effort to. There are people that have problems, physical problems, and I feel sorry for them, and there's always going to be people worse off because of their problems. But some people just are getting older and they have an attitude problem, which doesn't help, does it, really?
Now, obviously you finished this book, Born Too Soon. Are there any plans for Born Too Soon 2, or maybe a different title?
Well, you made me think now. I'll have to think about that one. I didn't bring in too much about the rest of the family. I mean, they obviously figured in my life, but it was about really starting off with my eyes and stuff like that. It does feel a bit funny now, not having some writing to do, but it would have to be something completely probably different.
So you obviously, your book is, you've written it down, it's in a PDF format, so it's something you can download on a Kindle and read that way, but you have sent it to a publisher as well, so there's hope that maybe you will see your book published.
It might be, and I've got hard copies anyway.
If someone wanted to maybe get a peek at your book, even if it's just a few passages, or maybe if you were feeling very generous and sharing the whole book, could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'd love them to. I mean, I've lived in various places, as you can see from my book, and also I've known a lot of people, and it would be so lovely. If you can give my email address.
Absolutely.
And if anybody recognises me or knows me, so if they listen to that and want to get in touch, you know, it'd be lovely to hear from people that I used to know. I really would. If anybody's still alive, you know, and would like to get in touch.
I'll give out the email address in a moment. But Jill, in the meantime, it's been so lovely speaking with you. And I really appreciate you taking your time to share your story on RNAB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
And if you would like to get in touch with Jill, her email address is jillfry123@btinternet.com.
The closer you get, the better you look, baby. The better you look, the more I want you.
Jackie Wilson bringing us to the end of today's happy hour. And all that's left now is to share our music therapy moment for today.
And the song was chosen by Julian, who is returning to introduce it shortly and to explain why this particular track means so much to him.
Remember, you can share your own music therapy moments with us.
Yeah, you can. It can be anything from a track that means a lot to you, or something that helps you get up and dance, or something that helped you through a tough time, or anything else in between.
So get in touch and share your choices. It's radio@rnib.org.uk. Now we're going to let Red ask Julian that all important question, what track he'd like to share. And Paulina and I will see you on the next happy hour. Bye.
Bye.
I wondered if there is a song that you turn to when you are feeling particularly low.
Oh, wow. There's so many that I have listened to over the years, which still make me feel stronger, I suppose, or more blessed. I think the one I would go for would be Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush, Don't Give Up, which I've always found quite uplifting. In this proud
land we grew up. Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full along with all the interviews, tips and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.